Good morning and welcome to GCC's 2020 third quarter earnings call. Before we begin, I would like to remind you that this call is being recorded and all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Please note that a slide deck will accompany GCC's earnings results webcast. The link is available on the company's webcast at gcc.com within the Investor Relations section. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions at the end of today's presentation. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ricardo Martinez, Head of Investor Relations. Please go ahead, Ricardo.
Thank you, Operator. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining GCC's earnings call. With me today are Enrique Escalante, our Chief Executive Officer, and Luis Carlos Arias, our Chief Financial Officer. As a reminder before we begin, today's discussion contains forward-looking statements about the company's future business and financial performance. These are based on management's current expectations and are subject to risk and uncertainty. You can find more information about risk, uncertainties, and other factors that could affect our operating results in our most recent filings with the Mexican Stock Exchange. As seen on slide 2, our forward-looking statements provide information on these factors, including the effects related to COVID-19 that could affect our financial results. There is significant uncertainty about the duration and anticipated effects of the pandemic. GCC's outlook could change. The effects on the company's business and its results are a best estimate based on the information available today. Before we begin, please know that, in the interest of safety, each of us is working remotely. We would ask you to bear that in mind in case of any technical difficulties which may occur. Let me now turn the call over to Enrique.
Thank you, Ricardo, and good morning, everyone. I would like to take this opportunity to say that none of our outstanding results would be possible without the enthusiasm and dedication that every employee puts in daily. Everyone at GCC is working under tremendous pressure, with fewer resources, rigorous safety protocols, and are still finding new ways to deliver results. On behalf of GCC, thank you very much. Your efforts have not gone unnoticed. I'm proud to be part of this amazing organization and how we are weathering the storm. My team and I, and the board, fully recognize this achievement belongs entirely to our employees, no matter if they are working from home or continuing to work each day on the front lines. On today's call, I will discuss GCC's Q3 results and the drivers of our performance this past quarter. Luis Carlos, our CFO, will review GCC's financial results and will then turn the call back to me for closing remarks. After that, we will take your questions. Turning to slide 3, please. We deliver strong operational results for the third quarter of 2020. GCC had a steady bottom line growth, showing once again the continued and successful execution of a cost and expense reduction plan throughout GCC. Even though our sales decreased by 7% in the quarter, and were basically unchanged year-to-date, EBITDA and margins had a solid increase despite the well-known economic challenges. All across our markets, we experienced mixed demand for our products, with segments doing better and others not so much. As we reported in our quarterly results yesterday, our Q3 2020 results in the U.S. were mainly impacted by a tough comparison against an all-time high third quarter of last year, of course, and a global drop in oil wells and volumes. As a reminder, the construction industry and our business were severely hit with snow and floodings during the first half of 2019, but the second half recovered with strong volumes in most of our U.S. markets. Consequently, we are having challenging comparables for the second half of 2020, following easier comparables from the first half of the year. In Mexico, the third quarter results showed a V-shaped recovery from the negative impact of the national lockdown as most of our customers remain closed. Let me now provide a more detailed review of our business's main drivers starting in the U.S. I will then review GCC's Mexico operations. Let's turn to slide 4. The net volume declined 14% and ready mix volumes were unchanged year on year, while prices increased 2.7% and 3.6% respectively. In El Paso, Texas, along with Las Cruces, New Mexico, infrastructure and paving projects continue to grow. We have a robust backlog in this area, primarily coming from the restart of the Dix Air Force Base project, as well as soil stabilization projects and logistic warehouses, like the construction of a new Amazon distribution center. Regarding the Permian Basin market in West Texas, oil well cement volumes have declined around 40% year to date. On the positive side, as of October 1st, we eliminated the temporary price reduction given in Q2 and 3. Some large customers have commented they believe the market has bottomed out, but the recovery will be very slow. Therefore, in the short term, we do not expect to fully recover the 9% of GCC's total cement volume that oil well cement accounted for last year. The market will definitely diminish its relevance this year. In response to the market decline, one of the footprints in our West Texas cement plant remains idle, and we stopped sending supplementary shipments of oil well cement from the plants in Chihuahua, Mexico, and Tijuana, New Mexico. Fortunately, some additional commercial projects in the Albuquerque area will keep our footprint at Tijuana's running full for the rest of the year. On slide 5, in Colorado, we continue to hear robust performance with low levels of activity from public infrastructure projects. Additionally, we are enthusiastic about the residential segment. The last public information shows that housing permits have increased 8% year-to-date in Colorado. Turning to our Midwest operations, the wind farm construction sector was again a strong driver for demand this quarter. We are confident this segment will gain more relevance for the foreseeable future, well into 2021, boosted by an increasing demand for renewable energy and to use the tax incentives. There are many ongoing projects in most of our main markets. The infrastructure segment, which represents around 50% for our U.S. cement volumes, remains strong. In Q2, projects accelerated as lockdown significantly reduced traffic. In Q3, projects ran at a normal pace, backed by DOT funding to the end of the year. In this regard, we welcome the fact that the Democrats and the White House agreed on a deal for a continuing resolution to keep federal funding for surface transportation into 2021. Not letting it expire. We remain cautiously optimistic on further economic stimuli from the government, including a sizable infrastructure bill that will compensate for the state's budget's projected shortfall. In the residential segment, low interest rates and a healthy supply and demand dynamics, along with tight inventory levels, have supported the housing market. The single-family segment has been supported by families looking for more space and moving out of the cities in the suburbs. And in many cases, second homes, as is the case in the Colorado Mountains. Furthermore, with record low mortgage rates, millennials are becoming first-time home buyers. As expected, non-residential and agricultural segments have been under pressure due to the severe impact of COVID-19 in travel, hospitality, and food processing industries. So far this year, we have not seen any relevant work cancellation, but certainly slower demand in the agricultural products area we serve. In terms of pricing for 2021, we have announced an additional $8 price increase per short ton in construction cement, and a 5-7% increase in oil well cement. Both increases go into effect on January 1st. Looking ahead, given the tight supply and demand dynamics, the high utilization level in the cement industry, and the need for infrastructure in the U.S., we see a price environment that continues to strengthen. To sum things up, our U.S. business results, with the exception of the oil and gas fuel market, are exceeding the expectations we had at the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic. Excluding the shortfall felt from the oil well market, as of September in the U.S., our construction cement volumes are at 4% of its last year levels. A distinctive feature of our U.S. market is that we get neither the big highs nor the big lows. Thus, our backlog is strong with several projects in the pipeline. We expect this robust performance to continue in the fourth quarter as long as the weather holds, and we do not have any unexpected lockdown given the pandemic's recent increase. On another positive note, I want to inform you of a strategic realignment for the U.S. readiness business. We have reached agreement with Lehman Rich Corporation on a transaction and plan to close in the coming weeks. GDP will acquire 5 ready-mix plants in the upper Midwest, which will be integrated into our cement supply from our newly expanded Rapid City cement plant. Lehman Rich Corporation will acquire our last 4 remaining non-integrated ready-mix plants in the Fort Smith, Arkansas area. Both transactions are completely aligned into our growth strategy and accredited to DCC. Once the deal closes, it will create additional synergies, given that all of our ready-mix assets will be integrated into our own cement distribution network. Turning to our Mexico operations on slide 7. During the course of June, our primary customers, like the mining industry, industrial warehouse construction and housing, restarted operations after more than 2 months of the national lockdown. Needless to say, we are pleased with the V-shaped recovery seen in this quarter in Mexico because of a strong and stable return in cement volumes across our market. We began Q3 with considerable uncertainty related to the COVID-19, paired with an increasingly competitive industry environment. Cement rose 8%, while ready-mix volume declined by 4%. At the same time, the depreciation of the Mexican peso against the U.S. dollar reduced Mexico's sales by around $8 million U.S. dollars. That led to a 3% decrease in sales in Mexico in the third quarter. Without considering the FX effect, Mexico sales would have increased 9%. The self-construction segment continues to be very resilient. Ongoing quarantine and work from home trigger construction projects which increase our sales of bag cement. We were able to capture this pent-up demand leveraging our more than 60 contributed retail stores network, strategically located all across the state. We're encouraged by the unexpected positive effect in our Mexico operations with the conclusion of the USMCA negotiations. The state of Chihuahua, our sole Mexican market, is one of the privileged geographies that is likely to benefit from both the U.S.-China trade and trade wars, as well as the reshoring of manufacturing processes from Asia. UCC is in an excellent position to take advantage of the upcoming growth in demand that these situations might generate in the midterm. We have recently seen an increasing demand from industrial warehouse construction. Several sizable projects are in bid or have already been announced. Regarding UCC's commitment to our sustainability strategy on slide 9, in September of this year, the Portland Cement Association recognized UCC's Odessa plant for outstanding environmental efforts that go above and beyond what is required. We completed the installation of a system for NOx emission reduction and developed a unique programming approach, resulting in a more stable emissions control. Finally, as an active member of the Global Cement and Concrete Association, GCCA, and as part of our commitment to drive down our CO2 footprint, we have come together with the global industry to state a collective ambition for a carbon-neutral concrete by 2050 in order to meet the global climate challenge. You can watch the GCCA Climate Ambition Statement by several CEOs in YouTube, including myself. GCCA members are working in partnership with a range of stakeholders such as policymakers, governments, investors, researchers, and end users to set an achievable roadmap that meets global expectations and drives the appropriate response in taking climate action. This 2050 roadmap, which will be published with a detailed implementation plan by the end of 2021, will set a long-term vision for the industry and our value chain partners. The latter is a clear engagement on our foremost commitment of implementing global best practices related to sustainability throughout the organization, while further strengthening the company's long-term profitability. I'm totally aligned with our new UCC 2025 vision, which will be released in the coming months. Thank you for your attention. I will now turn the call over to Ms. Carlos to review the quarter's financial results.
Thank you, Enrique, and good morning, everyone. Turning to slide 11, economic cycles and market conditions are unpredictable variables which are out of our control. But what we can control, and most importantly, we are accountable for, are the decisions we make in order to keep creating value for all of our stakeholders. We cannot deny that some of the decisions taken during these uncertain times have been challenging, but they have strengthened GCC even more. GCC continues to be financially strong, thanks to the decisive efforts of all of our teammates. Whether working from home or on the front lines, they remain focused on our basic core activities: selling, producing, distributing, and collecting payments for our products and innovative solutions. Our unquestionable success in the execution of our plan to reduce costs and expenses shows our adaptability and what DCC can do, From the $20 million in annual savings announced in April, we have already achieved around $19 million. We are confident we will reach our savings target and might even exceed it. We expect to permanently maintain 50% of this year's savings, having found a sweet spot between short and long-term profitability without compromising any of our operations, employee safety, or taking unnecessary risks. Without extraordinary efforts made by the frontline, DC will not be able to generate these positive financial results. We honor our frontline's hard work during these last months. That is why we compensated them with a one-time recognition bonus. Please turn to slide 12. For the third quarter, consolidated net sales decreased by 7%. We saw an increase in cement volumes in Mexico, which were somewhat offset by U.S. cement and Mexico's ready mix volumes. Additionally, the Mexican peso depreciated against the U.S. dollar, reducing Mexico sales by around $8 million. Excluding the FX effect, consolidated net sales would have decreased by only 4%. On slide 13, cost of sales as a percentage of revenues decreased 3 percentage points to 66%, mainly reflecting favorable variable cost and production expenses, better cement and ready mix prices in both countries, lower freight costs due to lower cement shipments to the Permian region, as well as the absence of 2019 one-time expenses associated with increased cement freight due to weather challenges and purchased cement and coal. Selling, general, and administrative expenses as a percentage of sales decreased 0.5 percentage points to 7% in the quarter, mainly due to the execution of the cost and expense reduction initiative and the depreciation of the Mexican peso relative to the U.S. dollar. As a result, as we illustrate on slide 14, EBITDA increased 4% in the quarter, with a 360 basis point margin expansion, climbing to 35.5% at the end of the quarter, and 32.2% EBITDA margin for the 9 months of the year, while EBITDA rose 10% for the same period. Our EBITDA margin multi-annual objective remains in place to recover the 34% generated prior to the financial crisis. UDP's results show that we are on the right path. The EBITDA margin has increased 14 percentage points in the last 6 years, having one of the highest margins in the industry. Turning to slide 15, net financial expenses fell 9% in the quarter due to a decrease in financial expenses, resulting from lower interest rates on the variable portion of UDP's debt, which were partially offset by a higher debt balance, resulting from drawing on one of our revolving credit lines. Income tax decreased $3 million year on year. As a result of these factors and the benefit of strong operating and financial results, earnings per share and consolidated net income increased 8% to $53 million in this quarter, and 31% to $102 million year-to-date. Moving to our cash generation on slide 16, free cash flow was $104 million in the third quarter, 2020, compared to $91 million in 2019. It was mainly driven by increased EBITDA generation after operating leases, lower interest expenses, and cash taxes, decreased maintenance capex, and a much lower increase in working capital. In light of this, I would like to point out the improvement made in controlling payables, receivables, and inventories. Based on the last 12 months of sales, we reduced days in net working capital from 75 to 62, a total reduction of 13 days. Turning to our balance sheet, We ended the third quarter of 2020 with $511 million in cash and equivalents, including $50 million withdrawn from all revolving credit lines in April. Please note that as of September 2020, our net debt to EBITDA ratio dropped to 0.6 times, supporting our balance sheet as one of the strongest and healthiest in our industry. Thus, we are facing these challenging times in a very solid financial position. During our annual general shareholders meeting in April, an annual dividend payment of 0.94 Mexican pesos per share was declared, which would be distributed in two equal payments. The first payment was made on August 7th. Yesterday, the board of directors approved paying the remainder on January 11, 2021. For the second year in a row, the dividend payment increased by 15%, and we expect to continue increasing annual dividend payments at a historical rate, depending on the annual cash flow evolution. I'm happy to share with you one positive outcome of several initiatives to make this stock more attractive for investors and to increase its liquidity. GCC stock has been included in the S&P Bolsa IPC Index, which covers the Mexican equities market and seeks to measure the performance of the largest and most liquid stocks on the Mexican Stock Exchange. Finally, the coronavirus crisis will end eventually. In the interim, we will continue keeping liquidity as one of our top priorities. Our first concern is to build a strong and resilient organization in order to be prepared for any upcoming recovery curve, whether it develops as a U or W shape, or thinking positively, an early development of a medical breakthrough to combat the virus. With that, I will now give the call back to Enrique for his closing remarks.
Thank you, Luis Carlos. In March, our personal lives and businesses have changed in ways no one could have imagined back in January. Not even the most accurate budget could have forecast this change. We have done everything to deliver positive results and continue building investors' confidence by meeting our commitments. We quickly adapted our operations and processes to this new reality. Our goal is to maintain our financial strength, keep people safe and employed, and to continue to serve GCC's lifeblood, our invaluable customers. As we're headed to the last quarter of this year and the beginning of winter, we face two main uncertainties. First, how the coronavirus will adapt with more people forced to stay indoors coupled with the start of the flu season. Second, if we will have an extended or short construction season. These two questions could change our expected results, either positively or negatively. And our field view results range is wider than usual. With only one quarter ahead and short-term visibility and uncertainty prevailing, full-year guidance remains suspended. Economic data shows mixed signs. And while we're significantly behind pre-pandemic levels in most of the leading indicators, the upside always seems to take care of itself. Neither of us are medical experts, nor do we have a unique economic or weather forecasting abilities. With that being said, we speak with many informed people, pay attention to all of the relevant information, and are constantly forming and reforming our own estimates based on the available data and our own common sense and experience. In any of the Portland Cement Association forecast scenarios, either the U, the W, or the vaccine scenario, ECA expects a decline in cement consumption for 2020 in a range of minus 1.3 and 1.8. Our backlog remains encouraging, and GCC performed quite well year to date, generating a sharp EBITDA increase along with significant free cash flow generation. With our focus always on long-term value creation, we will continue operating in the short term with the same rigorous approach applied during the pandemic in order to continue delivering strong results. We delivered better than expected results, but we are not completely satisfied yet. We will continue looking intensively at efficiencies, costs, and expenses, always focusing on liquidity, but first and foremost, on our people's health as a top priority. To our investors, we encourage you to take market volatility and uncertainty with confidence in GCC, maintaining and sharing our long-term perspective with us. Now, before opening the call for questions, I would like to briefly comment about the resolution recently issued by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit in Colorado regarding the damages award related to our past investment in Bolivia. Since we are bound by a confidentiality duty, we cannot comment further at this time. However, despite some confusing and outdated news that circulated in the press recently, we inform you that we continue to contest that resolution, as the resolution does not recognize the previous determination of the Bolivian courts that considers the liability award new and in favor of GCC. Furthermore, because it overlooks the fact that there are ongoing damage awards annulment proceedings in Bolivia, we are preparing a petition for certiorari or a petition for review to the U.S. Court of Appeals resolution in the Supreme Court of the United States, and we will be sure to provide relevant updates as soon as they are available. Finally, once again, I would like to express my most sincere appreciation and respect to our teammates. Thank you all for adapting to these unprecedented times, finding new ways to work safely and collaboratively. I would also like to thank our board and shareholders for the trust and investment that placed in us. With that, our prepared remarks are completed. Let's now turn to your questions. Operator, please go ahead.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone phone, and also make sure your mute button is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And we'll take the first question today from Alejandra Obregon with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Congratulations on the results, and thank you for taking my question. My first question is on the transaction that you announced. If you could provide some color on whether this is just an asset swap or we could expect any cash to be deployed or any color on the size and timing of the transaction, that would be very helpful. And then on your inventories, I noticed that they're down and probably at the lowest levels in the last year. So just curious if this is associated to the strong demand or if there is any other thing that we might be missing here. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Alejandra, thank you for your question. I couldn't hear you well, the first question. I don't know if you heard it well, Luis Carlos.
I can repeat it. It's on the transaction that you announced, just whether to understand if this is an asset swap or there is any cash expected to be deployed and any color on the size and timing. That would be very helpful.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's a purchase agreement, but it's basically a swap agreement. There's a very little cash transacted in the operation. On your second question,
I will cover that
is like I will cover. I can cover the second question. It was in regards to inventory. We're having trouble out here on this side. As we have mentioned in previous conference call, we are very focused on reducing working capital, and one of the items that we've been focusing on is inventory. So it's just that we're managing better the inventories across the company. And inventories at the end, it's a balance between having, of course, the product available for our customers, and mixing that with the annual structure of the plants for needed maintenance. So what I can tell you is that we've been optimizing inventories across the cement system, and we will continue to be focusing on that for the coming months, because we still think there are some opportunities.
Understood, very clear. Just to follow up on the first question, can you share some color on timing and size of the transaction?
Hello, Enrique.
I'm sorry, I was on mute. My apologies. Alejandra, yes, the closing is scheduled for November, and we're not commenting on price. It's a small transaction, more than anything, a realignment, a strategic realignment that will create synergies because of the integration of this plant into our cement network. And with this, we look completely behind the outcomes asset that we had there before.
Understood. Thank you very much.
We'll take the next question from Froland Mendez with JP Morgan.
Hello, Enrique. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Just following up on the asset swap, what does this transaction mean for incremental volumes, either for cement or ready mix, or maybe call it incremental revenue for that portion of your business, especially since it's very near the Rapid City expansion? And secondly, I want to understand the fact of not giving guidance. Reinstating guidance. I know a lot depends on how much work you're able to perform in the last quarter, and that is related to weather. But if weather was to be, let's say, flat or with no significant disruption versus last year, and if you look at your backlog levels or the activity that you're seeing on the ground, how confident are you in the four quarter prospects?
Okay, I'll address this second question first. Very confident. If we didn't have these contingencies of the two main contingencies, obviously weather and also this new coronavirus phase that we honestly don't know what to expect yet with delays or cancellations. So these are two contingencies, and absent of those, I will tell you that I feel very confident that we have a strong close for the year. So with the backlog, as we have been saying, and when we have it like last year, and what did the other usually that we could perform pretty well almost to the end of the year. So a great company. That's why we say that there is a big range of variations, right? Because of those two contingencies. With respect to your first question, again, we're still on this confidentiality agreement with Raymond Ritchie, and we're not disclosing at this moment details of the transaction for them. But definitely, but definitely it's a good integration for our new expanded water treatment plant.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Enrique, and congrats on the very strong results.
Thank you for that.
Our next question will come from Carlos Peyrelongue with Bank of America.
Thank you. Thank you, Enrique and Carlos, for the call. Could you provide a little bit more color as to your expectations for infrastructure construction in the U.S. For next year? Some states obviously have seen fiscal revenues dropping, so there could be a shortfall there. There's a potential for Congress to act and provide some support, but if you could provide some color on that, would be great. And the second is related to prices as well. If you could also give us an idea of pricing for next year in terms of, you know, where's your utilization rate and the demand and expectations for pricing for next year would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. Make sure I'm on mute.
You're good.
Yes, we're here. So, again, we're basically following EPA forecasts, and of course we treat those forecasts with specific conditions in our own market. But as you know, there is a projection that in the U-shaped scenario, volumes could decrease a half a point in the U.S., and the W-shaped scenario could decrease 3.4%. So there's still a lot of variation and definitely a trend going down. However, given that we have already absorbed the majority of the deficit that we had in the oil world fields, we feel confident that the humidity and our volumes could be growing a little bit instead of decreasing for next year. Obviously, I mean, the dynamics on infrastructure very strong. With when we saw the pandemic coming in, we were more aggressive outbidding for infrastructure work, which we got. So we have some good projects in the pipeline, I mean, to get us on to the start of next year, which we were not counting on a few months ago. As I already mentioned, we're also bidding, I mean, several, I mean, windfield farms that are a continuation of the stimulus packages for those investments. Residential, you see them strong everywhere, so we're confident that in this year, I mean, we're going to look at them in some positive volumes for next year. Except, of course, any significant increase in oil fields. But as I said, we're compensating that with infrastructure projects. In terms of Congress, of course, that's the cherry on the icing, right? We believe that if any of the new administration is going to work hard on an infrastructure bill. We are cautiously optimistic, as we mentioned. We don't expect it to be the first thing that it's going to be addressed, but definitely it's going to be addressed. Now, if there's a Democratic administration, we think that's going to be stronger and more robust infrastructure program, definitely. And so that will be on top of what we have in our own projections and scenarios. So that's going to be very positive. Again, we have seen this or heard about this for many years, and we're cautiously optimistic that this could take the industry into a different level in the coming years. And that's what it's also, in our opinion, supporting the price increase. As I mentioned, we announced that $8 a short ton starting on January 1st. It is different than last year, that we also mainly announced in April. So we've been a little bit more aggressive in the market seems so far to be, I mean, ready. And we don't expect really to have, I mean, much pushback from our customers. So far, we have not heard, I mean, of any big concerns. So capacity continues to, I mean, if the market continues, I mean, next year a little bit low, but then rebounding after the pandemic, we believe, I mean, the medium term, it's supported for continuation of price increases. And that I answer your question, Carlos.
Yes, yes, you have. Thank you.
The next question will come from Francisco Suarez with Scotiabank.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having this call, and apologies if you already walked for the in your intro remarks for these questions that I have. It relates with your superb execution on cost and everything we saw in this quarter. I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I putting aside the obvious savings from shipping cement from Chihuahua to the Texas region, can you walk us a little bit about the overall logistical features that you may have in the Dakotas now that you have your operation in Rapid City up and going? And more than that, are those savings actually structural in nature? It is something that we can actually rely on future quarters? Thanks again, and congrats for the quarter.
Francisco, thank you for the question. Can you repeat the last part of your question?
Yes, I would like to understand if those inefficiencies that you reach in this quarter are structural, or if there is any cyclical or non-recurring component of those efficiencies that you reach this quarter, particularly in connect if those savings are connected by the Rapid City expansion and how you have added more assets to already mix as well, linked to that facility.
Okay. I'll leave the detail of the savings for Ms. Carlos if he wants to comment at the end. But let me tell you, in terms of the movement that we've been doing, I mean, to increase volume for the Rapid City plant, we are basically aligned with working through the strategy that we have presented all the time for that plant, which is that plant expansion should be reaching farther into Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, and those states to the east of the plant. And in that way, we're starting to ship back the men that Pueblo was sending to those regions to locating it in the Colorado, Utah market. As part of this plan, it's precisely that swap of revenue plan to increase as an additional volume of cement or shipments from the Rapid City plan. Also, we are in the process of building a second terminal in the Green Cities area, north of the city, to serve better the customers in that market, which also will give us larger market share in that market, providing for expansion of the additional capacity of Rapid City. And the time that we do that, we also being more permanent and with higher volumes in the Utah market that we have been developing in the last years. Mm-hmm. It's completely aligned with what we said. Those cost savings are structural savings because it's freight basically. So it's what we said, it's part of the margin improvement that we are shooting for, the 34% that we have been talking about for years, which is getting rid of those long freights from Pueblo all the way to those Midwest markets. Ms. Carlos?
Well, I don't think there's anything to add. I don't know, Paco, if your question was responded or if you have any additional data.
No, it's perfect, and thank you for that, and congrats again. Thank you, gents.
Thank you.
And at this time, there's one name remaining in the queue, so if there are any additional questions, please press star one at this time. And we will now go to Pablo Recalde with PAMCO.
Hey, hi, good morning. I don't know if you can hear me well.
Yes, we can hear you.
Hi, well, I have two questions on the balance sheet. The first one is regarding your debt. I don't know if you can provide some color if you're thinking of making a liability management exercise soon. I'm thinking on if you're thinking of calling the 2024 bonds in the near term. That's my first question. And my second question is regarding the Sobose operations. I don't know if you're thinking of maybe provisioning something or now, or you're thinking you have, I don't know, the strength to win that case.
Can you repeat the second question, please, Paulo?
It's regarding Sobose. We have read recently a lot of news regarding that you lost that case. You mentioned on your ending remarks that you're still working with the Colorado court, but I don't know if you're already provisioning something on that case, or you haven't provisioned anything on Sobose.
And the second question, I just could hear it about the Colorado court, but I cannot get the detail. Can you repeat that for me if you heard it, Ms. Carlos?
Yes, it's on the Sobose, on the Bolivian operations. Recently, we have read news that you lost the appeal and that you have to pay around $40 million. I think that's not completely true, but I just want to understand if you're provisioning something on your balance sheet, on your P&L, sorry.
Okay.
In case you lose the appeal on the Sobose. That's the second question.
Well, no, and again, we're in the confidentiality agreement here, but we have discussed in the past that we don't have anything on the balance sheet because we are protected by an arbitration agreement that we had with the buyer of our stock in Sobose, in which if there's any liability issue against us, they are responsible for it.
And on your first question, in terms of respect of the liability management, the 2024 bond is callable until June next year. So at that time, we'll be thinking of or analyzing of doing something. Right now, it's just not economically advantageous for us to call it. And even though we will have a lower coupon if we issue a new bond, but so we'll have to wait till June or two.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Paulo.
We'll take a question from Eric McElord with Bank of America.
Yes, hi, good morning. So breaking down the volume drop for this quarter was mainly because of a very hard comparable base, and then you also had lower volumes from oil well cement, right? In October, we've seen some early weather events in the central U.S. states. I would like to know if this would be an added pressure for 4Q volumes, or if it's maybe just too soon to draw conclusions. Thank you.
Yeah, October was going very well in terms of shipments up north in the U.S. This last week we had a weather event that you're mentioning. I don't think it's anything significant that will disrupt the system. We were running actually, above plan, and now we're a little bit below. So it's just the normal pattern in these endless snowstorms. On the other hand, I tell you that we really need everything in Colorado because the state is on fire and everywhere. And this is obviously going to contain all those forest fires. But I think the point for me is what the weather will hold in November and December.
Okay, thank you.
And there are no other questions, so at this time I'd like to turn it back to Ricardo for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you for your interest in GCC and for joining us today. We appreciate your question this morning and look forward to talking with you again in the months ahead. This concludes our conference call, but our team is, of course, available for any follow-up questions you may have. Goodbye and stay safe.
Thank you very much. That does conclude our conference for today. I'd like to thank everyone for your participation, and you may now disconnect.